Hello and welcome to the NBA Outlet presented by OTGBasketball.com. I'm your host, Nick Fay. With me, as always, Corey Waldron. What's up, Corey?
Not much, Nick. Sad night last night in the NBA world, but it was good to have basketball on. My Indiana Pacers kicked the crap out of the dreadful Atlanta Hawks, so I'm pretty happy. But it was a pretty good night of basketball. We're finally back after the All-Star weekend.
Yeah, and honestly, there's a lot of talked about good and bad. Like you mentioned, some bad news. Jimmy Butler went down. We don't really know the details yet. There's obviously that scandal with the Dallas Mavericks. We'll talk about that a little bit. But to start off, we're going to talk about the Washington Wizards. And the Wizards are an interesting team. You know, 9-3 in their last 12 games, all without John Wall. They have wins over the Cavs, OKC, Raptors. Thomas Satoransky is averaging 13-6, shooting 62%, 63% from three in February. So guys are stepping up. What are your thoughts on the Wizards right now?
It's really – all right. So I had a – when they played the Cavs and I was watching them play the Cavs, I had a lot of thoughts on this team watching them. You know, the first off, they're not better without John Wall. Anyone who says that, you don't know what you're talking about. You're – for some reason, John Wall is one of those guys in this league who is at times severely underrated. You know, people call him a ball stopper, and they say, like, he fishes for assists at times. I don't think that's true. But without him, this team, without question, has been surprisingly good. Surprisingly good. They've been fantastic. The ball movement is an area in particular that they've been really good at. I mean, against the Cavs, really, they picked them apart because they kept moving the ball. And they made the Cavs do a lot of switching, and it was problematic for the Cavs, who's, you know, they have new pieces, so everyone isn't on the same page defensively. So they look good, right? And then last night they play the Charlotte Hornets, and it's not the same team, and they get blown – well, not blown out, but they lose to a Hornets team that's not very good. So it's this weird thing with the Wizards where even when they had John Wall, they have these really good wins, and then they have these really bad losses. So it's really tough to gauge this team. And – you know, I want to think that when John Wall comes back, this team can be a team that, you know, secures home court in the East. But, you know, there's just something about them that I'm just not sold on.
Yeah, they're super inconsistent. I mean, you know, they're inconsistent in game to game, and they're also inconsistent in games. You know, they might play a great first quarter, a terrible second quarter, and then a great second half. You really don't know what you're getting. And like you said, obviously with John Wall, they're better. I think people forget how good John Wall is. And he just wasn't healthy this year. Last season, he was second in the league in assists, second in steals, 19th in per, third in assist percentage, and 18th in VORP. So obviously, John Wall is one of the best guards in the league when healthy. When they get him back, it's going to be, you know, a big difference. And I think they should be able to kind of keep this up. I don't really understand the argument that he makes them worse. Like, it's not like he doesn't pass the ball.
Right. That's the one thing that annoys me. People act like he's like a ball stopper. I mean, your point guard, for example, all right, Chris Paul. Chris Paul always has the ball in his hands, and he is known to be probably, if not the best, a top three point guard of all time in his ability to get others going and involved. John Wall is very similar. The only difference is Chris Paul, for the most part, has a slightly better, you know, supporting cast as to John Wall, who has Bradley Beal and Otto Porter. You know, besides those two guys, this Wizards team really isn't that gifted. Like you said, I can't say his last name, Satoransky. He's obviously been a nice surprise recently. And then guys like Kelly Oubre continue to develop. Mike Scott has been really good off the bench. But, I mean, besides that, like, this team doesn't have a ton of shooters. And a guy like John Wall, who's kind of like a Chris Paul, they need guys they can space the floor with. And this Wizards team, to the most part, doesn't have a lot of floor spacers.
Also, John Wall needs a better pick-and-roll partner. You know, Gortat was good a while ago, but this season he hasn't been good. He doesn't have a guy that can really attack above the rim on a roll to the rim, which would help the spacing inside. So I think, you know, and like I mentioned, he obviously wasn't healthy this season. I think you could tell just watching him. So when he's back, we'll see if he gets to that 100% level or what. But the Wizards are 21-16 with Wall, 13-9 without Wall. So a better winning percentage with him still at this time.
Yeah, and obviously, you know, the 13-9 without him, it doesn't look as good. But they just had a good stretch recently. You know, we've seen this before out of some teams. You know, they lose a star and then they start playing really well. I mean, the Clippers, for example, they lost Blake Griffin, and then they started playing slightly better basketball for a period of time. You know, it's not like it's unheard of to happen. You know, teams can get hot without their star. It doesn't mean they're better. It just means the guys are picking up the slack of missing their best player. Exactly. And I will say this. John Wall, on the sideline against the Cavaliers when I can't remember. I think Bradley Beal hit a big shot. He doesn't even, like, he just doesn't look excited, too. Like, I don't know if there is – there's always that, you know, the chemistry question about the Wizards. I really don't know if that team all likes each other. It's really hard to gauge because they don't look like a team when you're watching them that looks fully, you know, together and unified. Like, you watch the Cavs already, and you know, LeBron gets an and one off a skyhook, and he runs to the bench, and everyone's patting his chest. Last night, the Pacers, Corey Joseph had a tough layup in the end of the game, and the entire team ran over to help pick him up. Even guys on the bench helped get him up. So it's this really weird thing where the Wizards just don't look like unified at times. And that to me, that's more of an underlying story of this, is the fact that, not that they're worse or better without John Wall, the fact that the guys may not seem to like John Wall.
Yeah, I think there is a chemistry issue there. You know, there has been reports over the years of Bradley Beal and Wall not getting along. Then this season, you know, everybody getting to eat comments, and then Gortat saying something about John Wall and them not having a good relationship. Meanwhile, Wall set him up with a ton of easy layups and dunks throughout his career. So there is something we definitely don't know about, and it's kind of something we'll keep an eye on. Maybe you're right. Maybe Wall comes back and the team doesn't produce as much because the chemistry isn't right. So not really sure. What do you think is going to happen with the Wizards when he's back?
I think it might be sink or swim, right? When he comes back, you'll have the, you know, 15 games, 20 games where you'll get to see if this team is for real and rallied around each other, or if maybe this team is a team that in the offseason, maybe they unload a guy like John Wall. Maybe John Wall goes into the front office and says, you know, I want to get out of here. You know, this isn't the place for me. Because I read something too last night about how it was Stephen A. I was watching First Take, which I don't normally do anymore. He was saying how, yeah, he was saying how a lot of the people around the Wizards franchise and stuff, they're seeing Bradley Beal as their franchise player. Like, they're seeing, like, Bradley Beal is taking on kind of the forefront role on the Wizards organization, and people look to him more than they look to John Wall at times. So I don't know if there's a changing of the guard happening, maybe, but there's definitely, you know, kind of like the Westbrook and Durant thing. There's two guys who want to be Batman, and only one guy can be Batman.
Yeah, I could see it. The problem is they just paid John Wall a lot of money this summer, so they got a interesting little development there. But moving on, you know, just a reminder, you can always listen to the NBA Outlet on iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, OTGBasketball.com, and Google Play. But like we mentioned, we're going to talk about the Dallas Mavericks situation. And this is a segment from USA Today. The Dallas Mavericks are accused of protecting two former employees, one with a history of domestic violence, the other an ex-CEO facing allegations of rampant sexual harassment. So, I mean, we don't really need to get into the details of this. You know, one guy was sexually harassing women at the organization at different levels, and then the other guy was accused of domestic violence with a previous girlfriend, and then as well as a girlfriend that he dated that was part of the Mavericks organization. And then also the human resource employee didn't do their job in protecting these associates and these employees. So what were your initial thoughts when you heard about this before we get deeper?
First off, it's sad. It's disappointing. I know for at least us two, you know, we're big NBA fans. You know, we see what happens in other industries between acting, in other organizations and everything else where there's sexual harassment, everything that happens. It hadn't hit the NBA yet. In the back of my mind, I kind of figured something would come up eventually. It's one of those things where they come out slowly. You know, the first domino has to fall for more dominoes to fall. That's just what these type of situations are. The Me Too movement has been fantastic in exposing people who have done atrocious behaviors in their past. Unfortunately, it is now in our league. It is the Mavericks are the first team. I do not think they'll be the last team. This is just the start for me. This is the first domino. And I'm a guy who deeply respects and admires Mark Cuban. And when stuff like this comes out, you know, it's really hard to get behind a guy when something like this happens right underneath his nose in his organization. And he pretty much pleads incompetence. He says pretty much that he didn't know anything was happening. he wasn't aware of anything. Some of the stuff he said happened before he even bought the organization. It's tough to gauge the situation, Nick. I don't know what your thoughts are.
Yeah, like you mentioned, Corey, it's a terrible situation, and there's no place for that in the NBA or any organization of anywhere in the world. But like you mentioned, you know, it makes you question Mark Cuban. I've never been a huge fan of him myself. I don't know. He's always said like rude things about the Nets after trades and things like that. So that just made me not like him. And then just some of his egotistical like comments and things along those lines. He just seems like super aggressive at times. And I think like the way he handled it, saying like, oh, he didn't know and things like that. Like, that's just not what you do, you know, because it's probably going to come out that he did know something along these lines. And from what I heard in the reports, he was pretty close to the president that was doing the sexual harassing. So I don't know. What are your thoughts on Mark Cuban? What does it say about him in the Mavericks?
What it says is that there is still this underlying tone between, for the most part, multimillionaires, especially men, where they get a certain power and a certain status. And for some reason, they get this like God control or whatever they think. They think they can't be touched. And Mark Cuban, for whatever it's worth, you know, he's – everyone describes him as a guy who is always in control. Like, he knows exactly what he's doing. Like, he knows everything that's happening within everything that he's involved in. Like, he's always hands-on. So for a guy who's always hands-on, it's very convenient for the one thing that he's apparently not hands-on or with or whatever is something involving sexual harassment that he had no idea was happening. You know, if you look at any other sport, or like, for example, like Rick Pitino and Louisville, another scandal, that scandal that recently closed and happened, you know, he said he had no idea that the strippers or whatever were happening with his players. And then it came out that he did know. So, you know, everybody, and for example, A-Rod and steroids in baseball. I never took steroids. Report comes out. Yeah, I did take steroids. You know, for some reason, no one wants to ever admit to being wrong. Everyone wants to do this baloney, scenario where they go, I didn't know it was happening, or I didn't know. You did know. Like you said, they were very close. I just find it very hard that Mark Cuban had no idea that there was any, like, maybe he didn't know the specifics, but to say that he didn't know there was ever an issue with this man, to me, is just such a load of bullshit. There is just no way that you can completely not have a clue of what is happening, especially when there's somebody that high up and is pretty much your right-hand man in the organization.
Yeah, I agree. And I think one thing, you know, this guy wasn't doing it, you know, privately. It was in the open situations, like publicly in the organization. So you, like, knowing people who are like those type of people, usually can tell by their behaviors that they act a certain way, and you would know over time. And obviously the Mavericks did know, because they hired the new human resources guys, and they gave him pamphlets and stuff, but nothing ever happened. And then also, not to like sweep under the rug, the domestic violence thing is just as bad too. You know, like, an organization not handling that. We saw what it did to the NFL. So what do you think the NBA is going to do about this?
Because Adam Silver, he's been a tremendous commissioner to basketball. He's led this league in his short tenure. Fantastic, I think.
A great role model.
Right. He's been the opposite of, what was his name? Stern? Yeah, David Stern. He's been the complete opposite of him. There hasn't been any backlash really to Silver. He's handled, you know, like the anthem,
Donald any Sterling. Other issue.
Right, Donald Sterling. He's been great with all of that. I think he's going to make an example of the Mavericks. Like you mentioned off the pod, he emplaced the new phone system where if you have a issue of sexual harassment, you can call the hotline. That's a fantastic first step. That's not the only step he's going to take. When this investigation closes, I wouldn't be surprised if we saw the Mavericks get a hefty fine, lose draft picks. You know, you can't just fine an organization, right? Fining a multimillionaire $25,000 or $50,000, it does nothing. And especially for a guy like Mark Cuban, who has a ton of other businesses. He's, you know, he's one of the heads on Shark Tank. He makes millions of dollars off the NBA. Like, away from the NBA. So you can't just fine a guy like that. To really punish an organization, you need to take away draft picks. You need to, You need to limit somehow their ability to be successful in the future so that team really feels the misfortune of handling a situation as badly as the Mavericks so far have by the outside looking in.
Yeah, no, Adam Silver, I think, will make an example of them. I think that he will, you know, do as much as he possibly can. I could see definitely a max fine. I think the most they can fine them is 2.5 mil. That's what they did to Donald Sterling. Like you said, suspensions, you know, there's even been people mentioning, I don't think this would happen, but force the sale of Mark Cuban of the team. But I think that would be like next level unless some really bad things came out afterwards after they do the report. From what I read, I believe the Mavericks are going to do an independent report, and then the NBA is going to have access to all of that and then do their own report as well.
Yeah, I think, you know, just one of the stories, you know, from what I heard, that there was a one of the women who was sexually harassed. She said that she felt more comfortable talking to the players and interacting with the players than she did going into her own office. That she felt anxiety walking through her own workplace and going to her desk, but she felt comfortable around players because they knew how to act.
Yeah.
I mean, comments like that, like it gives me not chills, but it makes my heart drop to my stomach that somebody has to like go through everyday life at a workplace and feel as if they're an outcast or feel as if, you know, they're walking on eggshells. That's just not good. Like that stuff cannot be tolerated.
Yeah, like nobody wants to feel uncomfortable at work, especially a place you're spending more time than you possibly do at home, especially when you work in sports. But hopefully the NBA does a great job taking care of this, because we don't want to see this happen anymore in the NBA or anywhere else in the world. But moving on, the Mavericks also were fined this week for a $600,000 fine for mentioning tanking, and I think Mark Cuban said it was the best thing for them to do right now is lose. What are your thoughts on this?
Well, it's also funny because this is another situation where Mark Cuban is a hypocrite. How many times have we heard him in the past say tanking is bullshit, or tanking, you know, teams shouldn't tank, or I will never tank, you know, the Mavericks will never tank. I'm pretty sure like 2 years ago when they were really bad, or last year maybe, he said the Mavericks don't tank, we're not going to tank. And now this year it's, hey, we're going to tank. That kind of stuff is obviously hypocritical. You can't say one thing and do the other thing. It's literally calling the pot calling the kettle black. It is what it is. I mean, he's not wrong. It's not like the act of tanking is wrong for the Mavericks. It's just, you know, funny that he was obviously an anti-tanker and now he is talking about tanking. Because the Mavericks, as we both know, suck.
Yeah, I mean,
They lost last night, I believe, to the Lakers. Now they're 18 and, you know, whatever. They still only have 18 wins.
Exactly. I mean, tanking isn't bad, and like, but I think you just don't publicly say things like that. You're like, oh, we just want to play the young guys more. You know, you make it sound better, because obviously the NBA doesn't want that look either. But some more bad news, like we mentioned, Jimmy Butler went down in the Houston Rockets game yesterday. I mean, the Timberwolves Rockets game yesterday. Non-contact knee injury. Got some stats from Reddit. Jimmy Butler leads the league in minutes per game at 37.3. He's also averaged 37.7 minutes per game over the last five seasons, which leads the NBA as well. So do you think minutes were a reason why he went down with the injury? Obviously, we have no details about what it was, but it doesn't look positive.
Derrick Rose, Joakim Noah, Zach LaVine, Jimmy Butler. Luol Deng. What do all four of these players have in common? They were all ran into the dirt by Thibs. He played them all a boatload of minutes. Derrick Rose was the first one to break in Chicago. Joakim Noah, as we've seen, has had a lot of, you know, aftermath effects. His legs are not underneath him. Zach LaVine, his 1 year with Thibs, tore his ACL. Obviously, it's, you know, it was half a season, so who knows if it was really from Thibs, but Zach LaVine was still playing a boatload of minutes last year before he got hurt.
Yeah.
You know, it's he doesn't, it's not like it's like, I understand, you know, because a team like the Timberwolves, you just don't have a bench here. It's like you want to lean on your starters heavily, but there comes a point in time where you need to look simply at numbers. You can't have your entire starting five in the top five for minutes and think that's going to have a positive effect. I mean, just look at the fourth quarter numbers for the Timberwolves. They're a terrible team in the fourth quarter. And if you want to know why, it's because they have to play these starters for huge minutes. Jimmy Butler was so tired at the All-Star weekend that he asked to sit out of the game. He didn't even play the All-Star game because he was tired, because he was ran to the ground the first half of the season. And then the first game back, this happens off non-contact. I saw Victor Cruz tear his ACL a couple of years ago when he was with the Giants, just jumping for a ball non-contact. Non-contact to me is probably worse than having a contact injury, because that's just a wear and tear in your body just giving up. You know what I'm saying? Like, your body just gave up on a non-contact injury.
It's definitely scary. And I think not only their minutes high, but I've heard people around the league mention this. It's also guys playing basketball year-round, not taking enough time off and just like focusing so much on training or deep playoff runs, getting all these minutes. So I think that could have an impact. So, I mean, what do you think this means for the Timberwolves? Hypothetically, let's say worst case scenario, Jimmy Butler's out for the season. They're only three games up on the Clippers and nine. Could they miss the playoffs?
Yeah. What does it mean? Let me give you a couple stats, Nick, on where Jimmy Butler is on the ranking page for the Timberwolves. He leads the team in points, field goal attempts, steals, and minutes. He played 37.3 minutes per game, by the way. And then he was second in assists and third in rebounds. So in almost every major statistical category for the Timberwolves, he was up in the top of. He became the leader of that team over his half a year there. Yeah, they're in trouble. Karl Anthony Towns is not a great defender. Andrew Wiggins is not a very good defender. And you just lost your best wing defender, your best player. This team is in trouble. We talked about in the last podcast the Spurs possibly falling to maybe out of the playoffs or to the 7th seed or 8th seed. The Timberwolves just now almost are a guarantee to be a 7-8 seed or out of the playoffs. Yeah. I don't think they can. If Jimmy Butler's out, there's no way they stay between the 4 and 6 seed. There's just no way. There's not enough talent on that roster. They doesn't trust the bench unit enough to run those guys. They're in trouble, big trouble.
And they haven't been good without Butler when he's been out, so that's an issue as well. So, I mean, it's definitely something to worry about, and the T-Wolves have had a long streak of no playoffs, so that would really hurt for the fans.
It would. I saw someone tweet last night that the Timberwolves are officially a cursed organization. And I don't really believe in curses. Don't anyone listening, I'm not a cursed guy. I don't really believe in that nonsense. But they've definitely had a string of bad luck. And now the question is, you know, who do you hold accountable for this? Is this just an injury, or do people hold, you know, Tibbs accountable? Because what does it take to get Tibbs to finally stop playing starters a boatload of minutes? Do we need Andrew Wiggins to tear his ACL too for him to figure out that he can't run these guys into the ground like this? I mean, there's got to be a point where someone says, you know, you got to stop playing these guys like this.
Yeah. I mean, it's got to come from up in the organization, but obviously Tibbs holds a lot of power there. But moving on from there, a quick game to end this one. We mentioned overrated and underrated a lot on this specific podcast and obviously throughout the podcast series. But I'm going to give you some names and you're going to tell me if they're overrated, underrated, or on point. Anthony Davis.
Underrated.
Yeah, especially lately. Like, his numbers have been ridiculous, and a lot of people have mentioned him being overrated, which is nuts because he can fill out a stat line probably better than anybody. Draymond Green.
I'm going to say slightly overrated, only because his offensive game is not as polished as many believe. But defensively, there's not a better power forward defensively at times. But offensively, he is slightly overrated, I think.
I think Draymond's on point for me. I think a lot of people sleep on his facilitating, but they might overrate other parts of his game because I think there's people that overrate him, underrate him, so it's probably in the balance. Al Horford.
Underrated. People don't like how his game is slow, but he's fantastic.
Honestly, it's kind of annoying, to be honest. Like, all you see Al Horford make great plays on both ends of the floor. It's not fancy, not flashy, but he does the right thing. Coaches love him. He has a big impact on the Celtics. James Harden.
Underrated. Another guy who is too good and too great, and people rather critique his flopping than let his game play.
Yeah, all you hear about, you know, after Harden started to play some defense and people couldn't use that, all they complained about was how he draws fouls. I mean, that's a skill. So Harden for me is underrated. I think a lot of people don't respect him as being one of these top five players in the league. They just are like, oh, until he does it in the playoffs, but we'll see what happens this year. Nikola Jokic.
I actually think he's slightly overrated. I think he's slightly overrated.
I don't. I think he's probably slightly underrated because so many people are always looking for specific stats or, you know, athleticism from the big man. But I think what he does from a playmaking perspective is ridiculous. I saw him drop a pass in yesterday. He was almost at the half court line. I think he threw a pass to either Gary Harris or Will Barton, like right in front of the rim. He dropped it in over the defender, one handed pass, like it was nothing. I think he had his third straight triple double too. Lou Williams.
Underrated only because he keeps getting slept on and certain, like the all-star game, certain, you know, you can make arguments they could have been, should have been an all-star. So I'll say underrated because he is a fantastic scorer in this league.
I'd say it's about on point because I think guys overrate him and then guys underrate him. For me, obviously defense, he's not there defensively and there is some inconsistency in his game throughout a season. Carl Anthony Towns.
I think he's slightly overrated. And it's only because his defensive game is terrible. If you watch Carl Anthony Towns for 48 minutes, there's at least going to be 20 minutes worth of him losing a guy defensively and being beat on a backdoor cut because he gets too far away from the basket.
Yeah, I would actually say he's probably slightly overrated in terms of what he is this season. But in terms of big picture, you know, I think he still has the talent to be, you know, an amazing player in the future. Russell Westbrook.
I think he's on point to where he is. I don't think he's actually overrated or underrated. I think there's just the mutual kind of like, you know, love, hate. You either love Westbrook or you hate Westbrook.
Yeah, I can see that. I think about on point because guys are overrating, underrating him all over the place. And then just a quick shout out to KD because we talked about so many negative things. KD invested $10 million into a program to help kids get into college and, you know, fill out their dreams. So you want to always shout out the good stuff that these guys do. And he feels like nobody's talking about that, even though that's a pretty big deal.
It's fantastic. The one good thing about a lot of these NBA stars, especially like the NBA cares, which is a great thing the NBA does. A lot of these guys, they always give back. You know, LeBron helps fund schools. Kevin Durant, like you said, give $10 million. These guys are fantastic at giving back to the community. And a lot of the big reason why is because all of these guys came from, you know, low-income areas, low-income houses. You know, they didn't have a lot growing up, and they made it to the biggest stage. They give back, which is obviously – there's not much more you could ask for.
Yeah, and $10 million is no joke. Obviously, Kevin Durant is super rich, you know, endorsements and NBA contracts, but still, $10 million is impressive. But that wraps it up for the NBA Outlet. Thank you, as always, Corey. Thank you, everybody, for listening. You can check us out on iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, OTTBasketball.com, and Google Play.